Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road for my birthday this weekend. It's at Fadley's. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation, where even when it rains, I love my windows because they're keeping the bad stuff out. Buy two, get two free. It's 866-90-NATION. Luke Jones joins us now in preparation. Luke, I made a mistake. I'm wearing my Raskin Global shirt that somehow is Giants blue. I didn't really mean to do that. It's also Buffalo Bills blue. Probably could be some Cowboys blue if you look at it the wrong way. This is an interesting game, right? I mean, the Giants have been a much improved team, a higher ceiling team, and a team that most of us watch play on Sunday morning over London and do a pretty good job against the Packers. This is a much more formidable opponent than maybe we saw on the schedule back in April.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And for me, I don't really think they're a great team or even a good team. What I do think they are is a well-coached team. And in the NFL, that can go a long way when we know that the difference in talent from the worst team to the best team isn't like college football, right? I mean, all teams still have good players and have a lot of good players, but coaching does matter. And I think what we're seeing with Brian Daboll and of course, old friend Wink Martindale, which is a big storyline this week, is a team that I don't think has a lot of great football players. I don't think they have a lot of talent. I think they have some good players, and I think they certainly are getting more from Saquon Barkley, for example, and that's a big thing for their offense that hasn't been there the last couple of years with his injuries. But I think you have a coaching staff that you have players buying into what they're selling, and it's resulted in a much better football team. I still don't think they have, you know, you mentioned higher ceiling. Yes, generally speaking, I agree with you, but I don't think it's a high ceiling team overall right now. I think it's a team that's in a rebuilding transitional period of time, starting with their quarterback who, you know, has played better, but still has not proven himself to be a franchise quarterback or someone that you're going to build around for the long haul. But they are playing better, and you have to give them credit for what they did, albeit in London. And we know the strange, you know, endeavor of going across the ocean and playing a game. And the Ravens could tell you how weird that was 5 years ago and how that turned out for them. But you have to give them credit because they went up against a Packers team that is having some of its own issues, but it's still the Packers, right? Still a team coming off of a great 2021 season and has plenty of good players on the defensive side of the ball. But these Giants scored points and moved the ball, even with a slew of injuries at the wide receiver position. So from that standpoint, they should have the Ravens' full attention. I'll say that much, which earlier in the season or going into the season, this is one of those matchups where, like you said, you kind of just chalked it up to, okay, that's a win, barring
something. Well, they're a 5-point favorite on the road, or, you know, like that's unbelievable unto itself because they haven't played all that great, the Ravens, but the perception of the Ravens and the perception of the Giants gets caught up. And by the way, I'll be at the Perryville Casino, at the Hollywood Casino on Sunday prior to the game with Todd Heap as they're open up a casino up there. Just a free plug there. I'll be there representing the Maryland Lottery, having a little bit of fun as well. But I would say the notion that the Ravens are a 5-point favorite on the road just kind of speaks to the perception of where the Giants are, that maybe they got lucky last week or maybe they don't believe in the Packers. Certainly, people still believe in the Ravens. I mean, 14 seconds away from being 4-0 or whatever that number is, right?
Yeah. I mean, it certainly speaks to not buying into the Giants and people still buying into the Ravens. And, you know, I mean, you look at efficiency metrics, things of that nature, DVOA, you know, the Ravens are still a top five team and the Giants, even at 4-1, are still middle of the pack, which, you know, is better than they were supposed to be, but leads you to believe, okay, 4-1, are they really a 4-1 outfit? Or is this a case of they have had a favorable schedule? They are well coached, so they are maximizing what they have, but you're still looking at it and saying, okay, you know, I mean, you look at the run of opponents that they've had and you're just not quite buying it yet. But certainly on Sunday when they're playing in front of their home crowd after coming back across the ocean after the win in London Sunday morning, it is a great opportunity for the Giants to kind of show that they are for real. You know, you stack a win against the Packers with a win against the Ravens and you slow Lamar Jackson up and I don't know, Daniel Jones pops a long run, Saquon Barkley has a big day and you beat the Ravens, then suddenly we're talking about the Giants in terms of, all right, maybe they are a team that could make the playoffs. And maybe they are a team that's for real. When you're 5-1, I mean, it's hard to, you know, it's even harder to dismiss that than being 4-1, right?
By the way, you're making me laugh because I'm an old fart, and it's hard for me to believe it's 25 years ago. But the Ravens started 3-1 in 1997, and I remember it vividly. And I remember sitting with Lawrence Taylor after the Ravens beat the Giants, and he's like, they still ain't going to be no good. They're no good. They're no good. And they finished 6-9-1, of course. But, you know, I'm wondering at 4-1 right now what the Giants need to do to think they're real, to count up the 8 or 9 or 10 or wherever they need to get. And obviously the Eagles look like they're running away a little bit here, and the Commanders probably aren't going to be much before it's all over. But for the Giants, this a win here would change perception of them. There's no doubt about that.
No question. I mean, they have much more to gain than the Ravens do in terms of perception with Sunday's game, right? I mean, the Ravens, it's a game they should win, right? If they don't, then we're going, not saying they're going to blow a 17-point lead like we're talking about with Miami and the Buffalo games, but we're right back to saying, you know, what's going on with this team? I mean, this is a game they should win. And not that you ever take road wins for granted in the NFL, and we know that. And to your point, it's not as though the Ravens have had this 2019 type run where they're just beating the pants off their opponents. So, you know, from that standpoint, I don't think anyone should be overconfident. But at the same time, you look at these teams on paper and the Ravens are a better football team. I mean, they have more talented football players. And that's even taken into account that, yeah, they are still dealing with some injuries, which, you know, not knowing if we're going to see Rashad Bateman or Justin Houston, and probably still a week early for Tyus Bowser, although he's back practicing. And, you know, same goes for David Ajabo, who's going to have to ramp up with those guys being back at practice. But, you know, the Giants are dealing with some injuries as well. And you just look at these two teams, and there's a reason why the Giants have a first-year head coach right now. It's because they've been really bad in recent years, and they've gone through multiple coaches in recent years where they've been a bad organization. For as much as they might have a storied history, and, you know, you go back to, you know, winning Super Bowls and beating the Patriots and meeting the Ravens 20 plus years ago in the Super Bowl. They
go back to Eli Manning. Just go back to Eli, right?
Yeah, they haven't been that team for a long time. And even the end of the Manning era wasn't so good, if we're being honest. So they're a team that's trying to find its way, whereas the Ravens are trying to find their way in a much, you know, a much more of a micro level. But we know on the macro, the big picture standpoint, the Ravens have been a model organization. So, you know, for this game, this is a heck of an opportunity for the Giants to make a statement. For the Ravens, it's get another win, get yourselves to 2 games over .500, and put that rough stretch where you blew 2 home leads in 3 weeks and lost football games that you feel like you shouldn't have lost. You continue to put that in the rearview mirror. But yeah, this is a great opportunity for the Giants. And, you know, the one thing I will say, the one thing that makes me take pause, as much as there continues to be a lot of focus on the secondary, and because we insist, and I say we, not meaning you and me, but as football fans, as general media, we insist on using yardage per game as the measuring stick. And you still see the Ravens are number 32 in that regard in pass defense. But go look at the yards per attempt. Go look at the efficiency. Their pass defense is playing much better. It's not where it needs to be, but it's been better. And on the flip side,
well, the big issue for them was ball going over their head screws everything up, right? A couple of those screw everything.
And it was really just the Miami game where that happened. I mean, okay, right. Buffalo moved the ball late. The Bills are the best team in the league, for at least in the AFC right now.
Well, a really bad quarter made him 32 in the league last week, right?
Well, right. I mean, it's where they've been. But my point that I was trying to make was right now they rank 12th in rushing yards allowed per game. I have more concern about their run defense, especially in this football game, knowing what Saquon Barkley has been able to do and looking much more like the Saquon pre-ACL, who kind of, you know, I don't know if I'd say took the storm by league, but certainly looked like a premier elite running back prior to the injury. And, you know, Daniel Jones, as much as he doesn't scare me as a passer, although he's made a few more throws here of late and has played better, he's still someone that can get loose. And we saw Mac Jones do this. We saw Josh Allen do this. So, you know, this is very much a case of you need to be disciplined with your run lanes and maintain gap integrity and all those different principles that we talk about, because Daniel Jones, again, not Lamar Jackson, but can escape and make some plays with his legs. So you know, that's the kind of football game the Giants, you know, the Giants probably want to make this, you know, an ugly kind of game, right? Where, you know, their Wink Martindale has some secret sauce to contain this Ravens offense because he knows Lamar so well. And I'm not saying that will happen, but that's what they're going to try to do.
Well, you spent 15 minutes talking about the team and just said Wink Martindale for the first time. And I know you're a big Wink guy, and that is the talk this week. And even like watching the press conferences and John being nice to Wink after the divorce and all of that stuff. The bottom line is Wink knows every tendency that Lamar Jackson has. He's watched him practice for the last couple of years, right? So Wink does have a little internal knowledge that he could maybe help them about tendencies, probably.
Although you could say that on the flip side and say the Ravens know Wink's tendencies very, very well and know which times he's going to run cover zero and when he's going to bring the house. And you know he's going to blitz, right? I mean, John Harbaugh was asked about it on Wednesday. And you know, his quote was, yeah, we were just having that conversation. It's kind of like he knows that we know that we know that he knows that he knows that we know. So, you know, it kind of you can go back and forth on that. But I think it is fair. And I think what's relevant here in that regard is Lamar Jackson, in games in which he started, has never lost against an NFC team. Do I think it's some magical AFC superior to NFC thing? No, I think it's a lack of familiarity in the same way that when you go up against that pitcher who throws 100 and also has a wicked 92 mile per hour slider, well, you're probably not going to touch that guy the first couple times you face him.
You're not seeing MVP.
Right, right. But the point is the lack of familiarity, as you see someone more and more, and that's not to say that the AFC has it figured out. I mean, Lamar Jackson's win-loss record as a starter is what it is. It speaks for itself. But that streak specifically against NFC teams is they see him so infrequently, you know, and some of these teams still haven't seen him that it makes it much more difficult, more challenging for them. Is that mitigated a little bit with Wink Martindale's familiarity? Maybe. At the same time, you can know exactly what Lamar is going to do, but do you have the horses to carry out a game plan to keep him in check? I think the defenses that have done that, Buffalo, Cincinnati at times, you know, we've talked about they have athletes, they have good players at every level of their defense in order to take into account everything you have to take into account, because there's not just one set way that you can play him. You have to do multiple things well, and that still might not be enough. And that's where I look at this thing. As much as the Wink factor makes this much more interesting, there is still a matter of Wink can be as familiar as he wants. That doesn't mean his players are on come Sunday afternoon.
But it's also, you can get it right for 60 plays, but it's the 64. It's the 61st, second. It's four plays, three plays, one play that breaks your back with Lamar. You can have him held down to the fourth quarter, but here we go, right? So that's always the issue with him is the Ray Lewis 60-minute ball game that play to play, fine, you can contain him here and again, but once he gets loose, you better make sure it doesn't break your back.
No question. And I mean, Sunday's game against the Bengals was a great example of that. Lamar had a very subpar passing night. Let's call a spade, but you get to that final drive and, you know, a couple good designed run, well-designed runs by Greg Roman. And, you know, he gets loose a couple times, right? I mean, those legs are what make him ultimately so unique, so special, so valuable. You know, he has the passing ability, but it's the legs that make him the generational talent. So that's where it's just so tough because, as you said, you can pin him down and really contain him and keep him in check, let's say. I don't think you ever stop Lamar. Very, very rarely have you ever said that anyone stopped him. Teams that can contain him, though, you can do such a good job, but it comes down to a couple plays and busts a long one, or you know, he finds, you know, makes that dime throw in the coverage, and you know, you score a touchdown that you're not expecting, and it's a difference of the ball game. So that's the challenge for Wink Martindale. As much as he might know Lamar and he might have some really interesting ideas on how to slow him, I still have my doubts about that defense. If they have the talent, if they have the ability at every level to really carry out that plan. And when you look at their injury report right now, they're still dealing with a number of injuries. And even if they were at full strength, I still don't know if that defense has the talent you need to really keep Lamar down as much as they'll need to. So that's when it comes back to, can Daniel Jones, can Saquon Barkley, can this Giants offense score enough against a Ravens defense that, again, is still trying to find its way? But I think you look over the last couple weeks, they held Buffalo to 23 points. They held Cincinnati to 17. they're playing better. You know, it's still not where you want it to be, but it's certainly looking better than it did against Miami. It's looking better than it did when Mac Jones was throwing the ball all over the field against them, even up in Foxborough. So, you know, from that standpoint, that's where I still look at this game, and I still do have a high confidence level in the Ravens getting the job done on Sunday.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke out on the Twitter thing. We're getting ready for football on Sunday, 1 o'clock, lots of games, good 4 o'clock games as well. And a lot of baseball going on this weekend, which will keep Luke occupied here. I'm washing my Padres jersey right now, trying to dust it off and get ready for the weekend. Luke, to the Ravens and to getting guys back on the field. We're not going to see Ojabo this week. Certainly for Tyus Bowser, who's coming back from a horrible injury at the end of last year. But the notion that they're back out on the field, the notion that Ronnie Stanley's back out in practice and on the field some of the time, these were all things we talked about for 6-7 months, dude. We were talking about this in April and May and June and July. When are they coming? You know, it's middle October and they got some bodies back, and yeah, they've lost some guys, and Marcus Williams is an issue right now, and they have to figure, and they've lost three of their offseason acquisitions aren't playing right now. But that being said, they're starting to trend more in the right direction, Rashad Bateman aside, than the wrong direction.
Yeah, and that's what's encouraging. I mean, we talked about this at this point last year. There was such a sense of impending doom and trying to hold on, right? I mean, even as they were winning games, Steve Bisciotti even talked about it in the offseason. It kind of felt like a flimsy house of cards, that they were winning these close games, but wasn't looking aesthetically pleasing, and you just knew they lacked depth, and they were one injury away from being in a full-blown crisis at any given spot. And you just, there was a tough, you know, you didn't have the confidence that that was going to endure for 17 weeks, 18 weeks. And ultimately it didn't, especially when Lamar Jackson goes down in mid-December. I mean, it was all over after that. You're always, especially to your quarterback, you know, and not even talking about Lamar specifically, just any team's quarterback. You know, if you have a franchise guy, you're one injury away to that guy, to your season being completely altered. If Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes go down on Sunday, their season's completely altered, the Bills or the Chiefs. So it applies to anyone. But for the Ravens, as where they stand right now, and you mentioned it, it's not as though they haven't sustained some losses this year. I mean, Michael Pierce out for the year, Marcus Williams out indefinitely. He's supposed to return. I think he will, you know, at least try to return. But is that going to be when? Thanksgiving? Is that going to be December? You know, when's that going to be? And clearly those were prized free agent acquisitions for them. So it makes it more challenging in that regard. But you didn't lose Marcus Peters for the year. J.K. Dobbins is back. Gus Edwards, who we haven't even talked about, is practicing and moving back closer to a return. And you hope that really helps them with short yardage situations, which we know have been lacking for this football team. And as you mentioned, Tyus Bowser and Ojabo, Harbaugh already said Ojabo is not going to go against the Giants. He said on Wednesday he's not ready to rule out Bowser, but I think you look at how they've handled all their returning rehab, long-term injury guys. It's been roughly a month plus ramp up for each. Now, I think Bowser doesn't necessarily need that long, but I'd have a tough time believing we're going to see him Sunday at MetLife with the reputation for that turf and only a few practices under his belt. Bowser's the type who's very conscientious. They've talked about he's been very involved in the rehab process in terms of the steps and timetables, all those things. I have a tough time believing he's going to be ready to go. But the point is, those guys are coming back, and they're in a position where, okay, yeah, they're missing Rashad Bateman. You know, they've been missing Justin Houston the last couple of weeks, Justice Hill. So they've had their share of injuries that have made some challenges, and we saw that with the passing game with no Bateman against the Bengals.
Well, that's why JPP's here, right? Like, right, if Houston was right and they were right and they felt like they were online, they probably wouldn't have been moved to do that.
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially not knowing exactly when you get Bowser and Ojabo back. And look, there's always that understanding of, is Tyus Bowser going to be 100% right? In the same way we've talked about J.K. Dobbins, who's looked better each week, but is he back to pre-injury 2020 Dobbins form? No, not yet. I think he's getting there, but not yet. But the point is, you're in a position now where you're starting to get these guys back, and I think the needle's pointing up rather than last year where best case was the needle was neutral, right? It was staying the same.
But the sugar plums now are, oh my God, in 4 weeks we're going to have Ojabo and Houston and JPP, and they're all going to be 29 again. They're not.
But you have to hope if they're all healthy in December and January, if we talk about January, that'd be a formidable rotation. They'd have to worry about who they're going to start and who they're not going to start and who's going to play special teams, because none of those guys are going to run down a field on that.
Yeah. I mean, you're certainly in a better position than where they were even in the summer when we were talking about, you know, Steven Means, you know, talking about guys. Again, I love Brandon Copeland, but he's not Jason Pierre-Paul or Tyus Bowser in his prime now. You know, he's not one of those guys. So they've really had to patchwork this thing, you know, going all the way back to training camp through the first month of the season. And now you are starting to see that light at the end of the tunnel. Now, that said, again, you got to stay healthy and hope you don't have a run of injuries. You know,
too many safeties 2 weeks ago. Remember that? We have too many safeties. How are we going to get Chuck Clark? Oh, no, we don't have a safety now. So like that's the league right now. Right. And I think the same thing would be true in every city in the league, whether you're trying to get Tua Tagovailoa back on the field or whether you're trying to get, in the Giants case, a wide receiver on the field, or wondering how healthy Saquon Barkley really is. Right.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you can always talk about your best laid plans, right? We know how that ends up, you know, how that winds up more often than not. So you mentioned safety. I mean, you lose Marcus Williams. Let's face it. We're a quarter of the way into his rookie season. Kyle Hamilton's not giving them a whole lot right now. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. I mean, that doesn't mean he's going to be a bust. Doesn't mean he won't blossom into a really good player. But the reality is Marcus Williams gets hurt and they put Geno Stone in, who is a seventh round pick from 2020. Now, I think Geno Stone's a really competent, capable player who I think can do a nice job for them. But does he have the same upside as what Kyle Hamilton's supposed to as 14th overall pick? No. So that right there, would the Ravens have envisioned that when they drafted him in late April? No. So you never know what's going to happen. You know, some players develop more quickly than others, you know, and certainly, you know, you mentioned Hamilton. Tyler Linderbaum's played well. You know, I think they're very pleased with how he's played. I think he's done a really nice job. You know, a little rough in his opener aside, you know, he's played really well. So you're going to have your ups and downs with young players who are unproven, and these veteran players, they make it back to the field, but what do they look like? You know, I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul has looked very good for a couple games. What does that look like in December, though? He's 33. You know, what does that look like for Justin?
Especially if he's playing 50 snaps a week, right? Like, that's a different thing than, hey, I'm going to come in, I'm going to play 18, 20 snaps, go be in on third down, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll get it done. That was not the role that he was thrust upon, right? Like, in the beginning. And there's just no way you're going to run a 33-year-old guy out there, let him play 50, 60 snaps, and think 10 weeks from now he's going to be the same as he is today. There's no way.
Oh, no question. And that's why you always have to balance the short term, meaning whoever your challenge is that week and who's available in the field that week and what you need to do that week to win the football game compared to the long haul, right? You know, for the entire season. And a team that very clearly has playoff aspirations is very clearly the favorite in the AFC North right now via their victory over Cincinnati this past Sunday night. So you're thinking about that, but you still have to go out there on Sunday and play and take care of business. And to the point, going back to what we talked about at the beginning of our conversation, this is a better than anticipated Giants football team. So let me be clear. When I say I have a high confidence level, that's not to say that the Ravens can go out there and turn the ball over and sleepwalk and let the ball go over their head or let Daniel Jones escape and run for 45 yards and a touchdown. You know, they've got to play disciplined, rock solid football. If they do that, I think they'll win. And I think they'll win without it being, you know, biting your fingernails the entire time. But you still have to go out and do that. And the Giants are going to have a lot to say about that. And let's face it, I mean, Brian Daboll coming from Buffalo, a team that's had some success against the Ravens and, you know, probably, took a few, you know, things that he learned from his days with the Bills, to apply that. And we mentioned the Wink Martindale factor. So it will be interesting in that regard. But again, I'll still come back to matchups like this. Who are the quarterbacks? Who has the superior talent? And I still think the Ravens have very distinct edges there, but see how it plays out on Sunday. And again, anyone in Green Bay a week ago, probably talking in similar terms to what we are right now. And we found out, you know, the Packers got their feelings hurt. So certainly the Ravens need to head up to the Meadowlands being ready to play on Sunday afternoon. That's for sure.
big birthday weekend, not just for me, but also for Kiko Garcia and Jim Palmer and a whole bunch of other cool people this weekend. We're going to be at Fadley's doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. That will be delicious on my part. We'll be there on Friday morning expecting some great guests. Odette Ramos joining us. Barry Glassman, Harford County Executive, joining us, running for controller. And also, we're going to be joined by Felicia Porter, Councilwoman, as well as Tom Cole, talking about the debate between the gubernatorial candidates in Dan Cox and of course, Wes Moore, who was on our program at Costas a couple weeks ago. Luke will be at the Meadowlands all day Sunday, paying the tolls, eating the knishes up there that are so delicious that I love. Make sure you get a potato knish while you're up there at MetLife Stadium. They're delicious. He is Luke Jones. I am Nestor. We're getting ready for the game. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.